Welcome to the Mosaic Weekly Podcast. Here at Mosaic, we strive to follow Jesus in authentic community for the world. To learn more about Mosaic, check out the website at mosaicportland.org.
Well, this is the first Sunday of Advent, and Advent is the season of coming or arrival. That's what the word means, and we're starting into a series called Home. And Advent is about Christ coming to our planet and making it his home. His home away from home. The first verse that I want us to start off with was read earlier on by Phil as we started our worship experience this morning. It's John 1:14. And it just says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." Just look at that verse for a minute. The Word became flesh and made his home, dwelling, his tent among us. We've seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. He made his home among us. During the Advent season, we want to talk about home here at Mosaic. And I'm fortunate enough to get us started. My name's Morris. I'm one of the teaching pastors here, and I just lucked out to get the first talk, which I'm really thankful for because I need this today. We discover that when we want to make our search for home, it leads us back to a homeless stable. And this last week, I came across this poem by a guy named G.K. Chesterton, who wrote in the 20s and 30s. And had a significant influence on C.S. Lewis, if you're familiar with all that, about him becoming a Christ follower. And G.K. Chesterton is English author, writer, poet, and certainly highly regarded, wrote this poem called The House of Christmas. And it starts us off with this understanding of the homelessness of the stable being the place that we have to come to find our home. And it starts us off in this series so well. So here it is, The House of Christmas by G.K. Chesterton. I'm just reading about a third of it. "There fared a mother driven forth out of the inn to roam. In the place where she was homeless, all men are at home. For men are homesick in their homes and strangers under the sun. And they lay their heads in a foreign land whenever the day is done. A child in a foul stable where the beasts feed and foam. Only where he was homeless are you and I at home." The rest of the poem is actually quite profound about the homelessness, the lostness, the search for a place, and the needing to come back to the stable as a place where we find our home, the homeless place of Jesus who made his dwelling on earth. Christmas is a time when everyone longs for home. I love our decorations this Christmas. Don't they create a sense of home? And we all long for that at Christmas, and it's right that we should long for home. There are lots of songs about home that you can download on YouTube if you want that are Christmas songs, like "I'll Be Home for Christmas." You have 500 options to download that song. As if that isn't saying that "I'll Be Home for Christmas" is important. That's a song that keeps getting sung over and over and over. And then there's a song, "Oh, There's No Place Like Home on the Holidays." We watch Christmas movies, and they're all about a home that gets wrecked, and then something gets brought back into order, and it ends happy, at least if it's the Hallmark Channel, okay? And then there are the Hallmark cards. So just imagine a Hallmark card with me this morning. The Hallmark card has snow all over, covered on the front picture. Lights are everywhere, sparkling, maybe candlelight and also starlight. There's candles in the windows perfectly in this beautiful two-story or three-story home that has all the right architectural beauty to make you just say, "I want to live there." And as you look inside the windows of the card, you see a Christmas tree and a fireplace and decorations in the home. And as you look farther in through the windows of the Christmas card, you see a family at the dining room table. and they're eating a meal. They're together. And there's this sense in that Christmas card that everybody loves each other and everyone's together and there's no broken relationships and everything is perfect. It's paradise. Well, we need to face reality this morning. There's no home like that. There's no perfect home. Sooner or later, someone is missing. This Christmas, some of you will be saying, it won't be the same this year. And if you're not saying it this year, you're going to say it some year. It won't be the same this Christmas. Some of you already said that this last weekend. It wasn't the same this Thanksgiving. Someone's gone. Death took someone from our family, a grandparent, a parent, a child, a friend who used to come over, someone that we knew and loved deeply and dearly. Maybe a divorce ripped the home apart and you find yourself trying to be home in two places and you're not sure which one works anymore. Or maybe it's distance and people, the ones you love, just couldn't get home. Or maybe it's emotional distance and they just didn't want to come home. This Thanksgiving, Ruth and I went over to Seaside, just the two of us. We have some really good friends who have a condo right on the promenade. And many of you have been to Seaside, and you know what I mean by that. It's the sort of mile-long stretch that runs along. It's sometimes called the boardwalk at Seaside. And it's just this beautiful thing that dates all the way back, you swear, I think, to maybe the early 1900s, with this arched cement fence that goes all the way along. And but whenever I walk up and down the promenade, and we have done that for 20 years together as we've gone over and stayed at this place with floor-to-ceiling windows that look over the promenade and over at the ocean, when we walk out, we walk up and down and enjoy that, as so many people do on Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the other days of the year. As we're walking up the promenade, up and down the promenade, we always do this. And if you're there, I guess you do too. We look at the homes that were built along the promenade. And so many of them are like unbelievable. But this year I saw a home. And when I saw it, what went through my heart was, if I just had that home. It's the one all the way at the end of the promenade if you want to go looking for homes. In fact, the promenade is end, so there's nothing in front. There's just grass and everything. And it's just beautiful. It's this beautiful home. It sits quietly at the end. And the way it was constructed, as I looked at it as we walked up from the beach, I just said, if I had that home, I'd have paradise. At least that's what I felt in my spirit. But as we walked along the promenade, I noticed something else. There's light standards or light poles all the way along coming up from that beautiful cement fence that was built probably 100 years ago. And so you're between the houses and the lights, and below at the bottom of each light now is a plaque. And on that plaque, you can look at somebody's chosen words for what they wanted to say. They bought that and placed it there. And there's probably 50 lights along the promenade. I'd like to read to you some of the plaques that stand between the homes and the beach on the promenade. The name of the grandparents, and then the parents, and then this. And these are beautiful iron plaques, black with gold around them and gold lettering. Thanks for our family home. This to the parents and grandparents. Thanks for our family home since 1949. A place to build memories for generations to come. And then the names of the kids. The names of a couple, and then this. They first met in Seaside, 1930. And then this underneath. By the waters of life we sat together, hand in hand in the golden days. On the beautiful early summer, weather, when skies were purple and breath was praise, in loving memory of their family and a date. And then in remembrance of our parents and grandparents, since 1939, they filled our beach house with love and laughter and cherished memories. And the names of the kids. Then the name of just one person, their death day, 2011. And it just says, we little knew that morning God was going to call your name. In life, we loved you dearly. In death, we do the same. And then one more. I really like this one. In loving memory of the names of a couple. And then this. If I could live forever and you would be with me, I'd choose a cozy cottage and live by the sea. All of those homes are filled with memories to which the plaques across from them speak that you just can't have them forever. You can't have paradise. You can't have the perfect home. Christmas is our attempt to find it, but it's a mirage. It's broken. And that's why Jesus in John 1:14 were told he came into the world to get things back, to start us back to paradise. Maybe we should go to the beginning and the very first story of the Bible, though, and find out what happened to the first home in paradise. I'd like to answer the question, what happened to our dream home, which we all ache for and long for? And by the way, I realize that it's not just a house. It's everything that goes in the house, with the house, and the people, and the friends, and the food, and the football, and the fun, and the joy, and the marriages, and the children, and everything that happens. It's the home that defines that idyllic, perfect state of paradise that we long for. It seems to be the best definition. So let's go to the first home that was in paradise. Adam and Eve, I don't know. Do you think there was a house in the garden? I don't know. Maybe they just slept in the jungle, you know. I don't want to go any farther than that. But it says about this, that after they wrecked their relationship, because there were two trees in the garden, and they were only told that they shouldn't eat from one. There was the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life. And they were told, if you eat from the tree of knowledge and good and evil, there will be consequences that you won't like. And there were. And as soon as they ate from that, they hid from God. They hid from each other emotionally. They basically started to blame each other, hate each other, reject each other. They wanted to lie to God, lie to each other, lie to themselves about what had happened. And so God, in his compassion, realized that they were shamefully naked. And then he now realized it. It says, the Lord God made garments of skin. Genesis chapter 3, verse 21. The Lord God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife and clothed them. And the Lord God said, the man has now become like one of us, knowing good and evil. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat and live forever. So the Lord banished him from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which he had been taken. After he drove the man out, he placed on the east side of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword flashing back and forth to guard the way to the tree of life. They were allowed to eat from the tree of life, but hadn't for some reason. It wasn't attractive enough to them. The other one, the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that was the temptation that they weren't supposed to follow, but they did. And now the angel had to guard the gate. And have you ever asked the question, why aren't they allowed back into the garden? Why aren't they allowed back in to eat from the tree of life? Why are they forever banned from the paradise that they lived in? It's been wrecked on the inside. Paradise is no longer the same. Adam and Eve's relationship is broken. But now they even have to live on the outside. And why can't they go back and eat from the tree of life? Best understanding we have would be this. Because of sin, life would be filled with sorrow and toil. We know that for sure. And this would be endless agony for humanity. There would be no hope of relief if the man or the woman could eat from the tree of life and live forever. Endless agony in this state of sin and sorrow and suffering. So God graciously, and most of us don't see this in the story, God graciously limited the number of years we live on planet Earth. And we were made for something more. And he had intentions, though we die, and we can't get back to the tree of life, he had intentions to bring restoration and to bring us back to paradise. And that's the rest of the story. We were made for something more. And now we live in the in-between state, between what was the broken down condition that started and caused them to have to move east of Eden, with the angel guarding the gate, the east gate, saying, you don't get back in here to the tree of life. Now we're left living in between, waiting for paradise, when Jesus gets to bring about the full redemptive story that we're offered through the rest of the Bible. But walking with God in perfect friendship and intimacy and relationship is over. It's broken. It can never be quite the same way anymore. You see, what Adam and Eve lost in the garden wasn't so much the perfect place to live, as much as we look at houses and yards and estates and sometimes say, if I could just own that, I'd live in the perfect place. They had the perfect place. But what mattered most in the garden was that God used to come down and walk with them and talk to them and relate to them. There was a relational friendship and a deep intimacy between God and his two children, Adam and Eve, and walking together was what it was all about. And since Adam fell into sin, we all struggle with the relational disconnection that set in between Adam and Eve and God that day. They would no longer walk in the garden. And that was the best thing about the garden. Cell phone connectivity. It's a huge frustration, isn't it? Especially if you have the wrong company, which remains unnamed this morning. We wind up somewhere with poor reception, right? And just when we're in the middle of a conversation that's really important, it ends. And we just go, ugh. And we dial back and we see that our bars have dropped down to one or none. And 4G has disappeared to no G. And you're just going, what the heck? Here I am in the middle of Portland and I can't seem to get any connectivity. It's not unlike our current experience with God. Every person on this planet has unmet spiritual desire. Yet our connection has been disrupted. It's been distorted. Our intimacy with God has been broken. We can't connect with them the way we want to. We do have a connection still. But it's not the connection we want, and we ache for something more. So instead of trying to build the proper connection towards God, we turn in other directions and we build our dream home somewhere else. We don't truly believe that the most important thing in the garden was Adam and Eve's relationship with God. We come to believe that we can somehow create the paradise that was in the garden for ourselves, by ourselves. And we forget that it's connectivity with God that's been lost. And it's the rebuilding of that that's the deepest longing and ache within our souls. We don't even recognize that all the shopping, all the planning, all the dreaming, all the hoping for whatever it is you long for in life, whatever it is you're seeking to purchase or get or have or know or appreciate or make your own, whatever it is you're trying to get into your life, you don't realize that behind that deepest, the deepest desire is a longing for relationship with God. And the great danger is that we forget. But there are songs from time to time on the radio or on the CD that you buy or through a movie that you're watching. There are songs that remind us that we've got to get back. I just thought of three that kind of moved generationally so that I could catch all of us this morning. There's Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young singing the song Woodstock, which just says, we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. And then there's U2 singing, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And then there's Mumford & Sons singing, but hold me fast, because I'm a hopeless wanderer. Hold me fast, because I'm a hopeless wanderer. And I think the best interpretation maybe of that song is Cain has killed Abel. And if you read the story in Genesis, he's cast out without a home. He's not even he is a nomad now. And he is a hopeless wanderer who basically in the song is saying, hold me fast. The curse of homelessness, the curse of not being able to get the ideal for ourselves, the perfect life, The ache for something that will last forever, that will satisfy us. That homelessness came because of sin. Why do we yearn for a dream home? Why do we ache for the ideal? Why do we always find ourselves thinking there's something more, I need this, I want that. It could be a relationship or something or an experience, but we keep searching. And the best place you can go to find an answer for that would be Ecclesiastes 3:11, where Solomon has been searching high and low and continues through the book to do that. But he writes this in chapter 3, he has also set eternity in the human heart. That's God. God set eternity in your heart, in your soul, in your inner being. Eternity has been set there. And what does that mean? What does it mean that eternity is in your heart? It means that you were made in the image of God and you were made for the ideal paradise of relationship with God to be experienced forever. That's what it means. It means what was happening in the garden between Adam and Eve and God. That was put in your heart. And that is what you long for more than anything else. But your search often takes you off the road to secondary things, which is what Ecclesiastes is all about. After searching all the secondary things, he just simply says, nothing works anymore. G.K. Chesterton, whom I referred to, the great English writer and poet, just referred to this as the divine discontent. The divine discontent that's been placed in our lives by God. Each month, over half a million people Google this phrase, meaning of life. Each month, 500,000 people Google meaning of life to try and find out what it says. Blaise Pascal, great philosopher from several hundred years ago, said it this way, we are never living, always hoping to live. We are never living, always hoping to live. But we still have one bar that pops up on our spiritual cell phones. And we look at it and say, maybe I can get some connectivity. I was made for something more. And we place our call for God. But somehow along the way, it drops again. Craig Barnes, in his book, Searching for Home, which helped us think about this series, calls us spiritual nomads now. What's a spiritual nomad? Nomads are always moving. They keep creating new homes, but they never have a permanent home. Nomads don't believe there's a final destination. They don't believe there's a final home. There's no place that they believe they will finally settle. That's a nomad. Our culture is filled with spiritual nomadic people everywhere we turn. And many of us sitting here this morning would say, I feel spiritually nomadic. The real issue here is they've lost confidence that there's a final destination. Our culture has rejected foundations for truth. If there's no foundational truth anymore, then the result is we become spiritually nomadic and we have to keep venturing because there's no certain place to land. There's no objective truth to hold on to say, this is home and I can live here. That's where our culture is at today. That's the spiritual nomadic nature. We keep venturing. And we're suspicious that there is a place that could be called home. Don't you feel that about our culture? When somebody comes along and starts to give objective, absolute truth about where home is in God, in Jesus Christ, there's a pushback from our culture and says, don't feed me that absolute truth anymore. I don't want to hear that. It's like they prefer spiritual nomadism to absolute truth in a place that's calling forth from their inner heart, for he put eternity there. For some reason, because of our fallenness, there's an innate resistance to the idea of one pathway leading home. One pathway leading home, I don't buy that, people say. So there's no pathways leading home. There's only spiritual nomadic journeying. And there's a whole lot of that going on in our culture today. People have rejected religion. They've rejected the church. But they have not rejected spirituality. And the spiritually nomadic person continues their search, though they may not even define it that way. But finding home has nothing to do with finding truth. But what does the Bible say about that? John 1:10, the true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. This is Jesus. This is the stable. He was in the world. And though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. And then in John 3:19, this is the verdict. Here's the bottom line for Portland today. Light has come into the world, but people in Portland love darkness instead of light. Finding home is difficult when you don't have a map. So let's go to the last question this morning. Where is home? So where is home? In this life, we all need to understand something according to the scriptural story that starts with Genesis and ends in Revelation. Home is not so much a place as it is the relationship that Adam and Eve had in the garden. Home is a relationship with God, no matter where you are. This is what was true about the garden, and this is what will always be true. There's nothing secure enough to replace Jesus in your life. There's nothing secure enough that you can pursue, have, obtain, earn, grab. You cannot find a perfect career, a perfect marriage, success, or fun, or family, or a house, or a car, or money, or anything else. You were made for something more. So John 17:3 says, here it is. Now this is eternal life. This is what you're looking for. That they know you, Jesus, or God, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent. The true light was coming into the world. It was Jesus. Let me end with this story. It's the story that goes back fairly much to the beginning of the Bible about trying to find a home. And it's the story of Moses at the very end of Deuteronomy when he dies. Now, just for a little backdrop, let's all remember Moses, okay? Moses has been leading the children of Israel from Egypt to the promised land, which is called Canaan, for 40 years. He has put up with so much junk, so much garbage, so much pushback, so much disappointment, so much confusion, and yet he has faithfully led these people for 40 years. He made it his calling because God told him, this is what you're supposed to do. So he did it. And he gets to the very end, and we're at the end of Deuteronomy. We're at the end of the story of Moses. It's about to be turned over to Joshua, his assistant. And they're up on a place called Mount Nebo. And Mount Nebo overlooks the promised land. And in the last chapter of Deuteronomy, it says this. Then Moses climbed Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab to the top of Pisgah across from Jericho. And there the Lord showed him the whole land. From Gilead to Dan, Naphtali, Ephraim, Manasseh, the land of Judah, up to the Mediterranean Sea, the Negev, and the whole region of the Valley of Jericho, the city of the palms as far as Zoar. Everything. From the bottom of the mountain, he could look out across this place that he had been leading the people for 40 years. The land of milk and honey. Home, home, home. And then the Lord said to him, this is the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob when I said, I will give to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes today, Moses, but you will not cross over into it. You don't get to go into Canaan. Now, if you know the story of Moses, you also know that he wasn't afraid to push back against God. He went face to face with God several times. Sometimes out of confusion, sometimes out of great disappointment. But there were times when he just went face to face with God and said, this isn't the way it's going to work. And he was willing to challenge God. He had that kind of relationship with God. Isn't it odd? And doesn't it even seem mean that God says to him after showing him the whole thing, what will become home, the land of milk and honey, for the people you've led for 40 years. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over into it. And Moses doesn't push back. Moses doesn't say, hey, God, I know I made one mistake back there. I did one thing that you didn't want me to do. And you're going to do this to me? You're not going to let me go into the home? Moses doesn't push back. And I heard her speaking, Ruth Barton, and she just suggested this idea. I buy it. Home for Moses wasn't Canaan. Home was a relationship with God. After journeying for 40 years with God and asking to see God's glory and seeing it, when he finally got to the place he was trying to get the people and they looked out across it, there was no need to push back and say, hey, give me 10 more years. I want to go down and I want to go in. And I think I deserve it. No push back to go into the home, the Canaan land. Instead, I think Moses knew it wasn't a place. He knew it was a relationship. And so it says, and you will not cross over into it. And the very next verse is really quite profound in this story. And I think most of us have missed it. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in Moab. As the Lord had said, he buried him in Moab in the valley of Beth Peor, but to this day, no one knows where his grave is. Who buried him? God. Why? Why, when Moses fell over, did he suddenly get picked up by God and taken to a place that nobody, it says to this day, knows where Moses was buried? Why did God do that? I wonder whether it's because God was saying and Moses was saying to God, we know something, don't we? That it's not about a place. It's not about the land of milk and honey. It's not about a perfect home in a perfect community with a perfect yard and a perfect family and a perfect Christmas meal with perfect relationships. It's not about that. The world is broken. It's not about a place. It's about a relationship with you. And I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that. So my last question for you is just this. Will we ever get a chance to eat from the tree of life? We go all the way from the bad account or the sad account in Genesis, where they were cut out from the garden with the angel on the east gate. And we've been living east of Eden ever since. But when we get to the other side where Moses went, Revelation 2:7 at the end of the Bible says this. Whoever has ears to hear what the Spirit says to the churches, to the one who is victorious, to him I will give the right to eat from the tree of life, which is in the paradise of God. It's about a relationship where we will live forever with God. And it starts now by faith. Through Jesus Christ, the light has come into the world to lead us to that place, to that paradise. Would you bow your heads with me? Someday, you and I, maybe we'll grab Moses and we'll pull an apple from the tree of life. And we'll sit down and eat it together. And wouldn't it be fun to have Moses and you and Jesus eating that apple together and looking at each other and saying, this is a beautiful place. And all the relationships are perfect and the food is amazing. But Jesus, you are what I was always looking for. God, you're the only one that can fill a hole in my soul. Some of you are here today and you are going, maybe like that guy who was baptized last week, who woke up in the service and you just said, whoa, that's what I need. You can pray this morning right now and just say, Jesus, that's the answer. Enter in. Just say yes. And some of us are here this morning and we did that a long time ago and we've been kind of trying to live in it. But lately, we've been really dissatisfied. We've been unhappy. We've been anxious, frustrated. We feel like the hole in our soul grew back. And you need to stop this morning and realize that you can't satisfy that with anything. It's eternity was placed in your heart. And that is means that you were made in the image of God to know God as the final place where you get your answers and your hope and your meaning. So you're going to have to do something with that ache today. You're going to have to walk into it rather than walk away from it. And you're going to have to find the right thing, a person, to meet it. And you're going to have to let go of all the other stuff that you think will work and make a choice. So as we come forward to the table today, when you come forward, you're basically saying, there's only one place where I can truly be satisfied, and that is in relationship with Jesus Christ.
As well as 6:15 p.m. with children's classes available at all three gatherings. To find out more about Mosaic, visit mosaicportland.org. Thank you and have a great day.